This is Seattle's Morning News. Dave Ross with Colleen O'Brien. Over Thanksgiving, the White House released what is formally known as the Fourth National Climate Assessment. That's where they tell us what's likely to happen over the next 50 to 100 years. Dr. Amy Snover directs the UW Climate Impacts Group. She didn't work on this assessment, but she's worked on previous ones, right, going back to the 1990s?
That's right.
This is where you compile all the data, everything that we know about what climate change is likely to bring. And you have, of course, focused on the Puget Sound region. So give us the lowdown. Last I heard, the timeline had been speeded up. They were now saying that it wasn't my grandchildren who would be experiencing climate change. It was me and my children who would be experiencing climate change firsthand. So where do we stand on that now?
You know, I think the current National Climate Assessment is really emphasizing the urgency and the immediacy of the climate change issue. So you're absolutely right. We've been thinking about this for a long time, and we often were talking about things that were happening, likely to happen further in the future. But I think what people don't really recognize and what this report really emphasizes is that climate change is an issue now, and it's affecting us now and will be affecting us now in many ways.
So the question has always been, I think most people now accept that something's happening and the temperature is going up. The question is, how catastrophic will it be, and is it now too late to do anything to stop it? So first of all, on the too late aspect, as far as I can tell, we haven't met any of those emission targets I keep hearing about. Emissions keep going up. The carbon parts per billion keep going up. So is it too late?
You know, it is never too late. So every day we get to make a choice about how much climate change there is going to be. Every day our society's actions, the energy we use, the fuels we use to produce that energy are making a contribution to greenhouse gases in the atmosphere. And the simple answer is the more we put in the atmosphere, the bigger the climate change is.
So don't drive, is what you're telling me. Or get a carpool, and like a serious carpool with three people in it.
So in the moment, that is the kind of thing that people can do to reduce their impact. In the long term, it's a bigger issue about changing the types of energy we use, where our energy comes from, and how efficient our energy uses are. Right now, we live in the midst of a fossil fuel economy, and one of the only ways to reduce our impact is to use less. But what this report and another recent report from the Intergovernmental Association about climate change has really emphasized that the energy transformation that is required to make a significant difference in emissions is underway, but also needs to be accelerated.
Okay, so in other words, there are alternatives appearing. We can see that. We see more electric cars, but there's still a pretty small fraction of the overall fleet. And I'm seeing lots of windmills. But the idea that by individual decision-making we'd have a significant impact, I think that's a pipe dream, don't you? I mean, doesn't somebody have to – most of us are not going to give up our habits unless we're forced to at this point, or unless somebody comes with something drastically cheaper than what we're doing now.
So we're here talking a little bit about the National Climate Assessment that came out last week. There was another really important report that came out a couple weeks ago from the Intergovernmental Panel on Climate Change, and it was assessing what the global impacts of different amounts of warming would be. Mm-hmm. And it also addressed the question of what would be necessary to limit warming to those levels. Right. And this is the question you were asking. Is it too late? Right. Can we limit warming to amounts that we think we can live with? And so the short answer is, yes, we can limit. It's not too late. We are not committed to warming greater than that. But it's incredibly urgent to act now, because the reductions in emissions that are necessary to ensure we limit warming to an appropriate level have to happen really quickly.
So was it a mistake for Washington Village, for example, not to pass that carbon fee?
I think that the only way we are going to get to emissions reductions like that is to have a massive transformation.
So that means there should be a carbon fee.
I think there should be a way to limit carbon emissions.
Mm-hmm.
And economists actually advise us that the most efficient and effective way to do this across the economy is by putting some kind of price on
that
pollution.
Oh, yeah. That's been a conservative idea for a long time, is
right.
to price things.
And so the question is how you do that, right?
Based
and
on the consequences.
You get
yeah.
into the mechanics of the actual policy. And then I think this is actually where I think the really interesting discussions about climate change are. There's two major components that I think are super important to address and that these recent reports really put in the forefront for us. One is, how do we limit emissions quickly? What is the way to do that? And the short answer is there's no one way to do it. We have to do lots of different things, right? But how are we going to do that as a society? And the second is, how are we going to prepare for the impacts that have already been set in motion? And a lot of the recent reports, especially the National Climate Assessment that came out last week, talks about the impacts that have already been set in motion. Mm-hmm. Some of the ones we've already seen and the other ones that are likely to occur because they're essentially baked in from emissions that have already gone into the atmosphere.
Yeah. All right. So I guess to motivate people, well, first of all, here's what would motivate me to take fewer unnecessary trips. If gas was $20 a gallon, I would sit down and carefully plan out my next trip to the hardware store instead of going to the hardware store, you know, buying a can of paint and going back the next day buying a second can of paint, right? That's not going to happen anytime soon. But if you could scare me sufficiently about what the consequences are going to be, I might change without the price increase, although I really don't know. So what is – you're implying that there is something that no matter what we do is already baked in. Is that right?
That is correct, right?
Okay. So what is that? What does that look like for the Pacific Northwest?
So for the Pacific Northwest, like the globe, no matter what we do, we're going to experience warming, right? We have already mm-hmm. committed to that as a world society, right? Because mm-hmm. we've already changed the atmosphere. So we're going to see continued warming. And over the next handful of decades, the average temperatures will be warmer than the extreme highs in the past, mm-hmm. right? So moving to a climate we haven't experienced. In the Northwest, as you know, our most important way of sort of storing water from the wet season when it arrives, when it rains and snows in the wintertime, to the rest of the year when, despite other people's perceptions, it doesn't rain and snow quite as much,
right.
Is snowpack, mm-hmm. right? So as it gets warmer, we have less mountain snow. And what is that? That's our natural reservoir. So that has more implications than I think people really always think about, mm-hmm. right? So you can think about, we want water for drinking, right? So it's stored in the mountains in the winter, comes down the rivers, and is in the summer during our dry period, we use it to drink and water our lawns, okay? So a decrease amount of water availability in the summertime for those kind of uses. We're not the only ones who use that summer water, right? There's fish that we actually care a lot about, and we have laws to protect them. And so decreased summer stream flow and warmer summer temperatures are bad for the cold water fish, like mm-hmm. the salmon that we care a lot about.
But won't that then attract the warm water fish? I mean, fish do migrate, don't they?
Fish do migrate. We happen to have a major emotional and cultural connection to the salmon in this region. We care about the creatures that depend on the salmon, like the orcas. And in fact, we have, you know, committed ourselves as a society to not letting those creatures go extinct. Mm-hmm. And so, sure, if we were ready to write something off and erase a species here that we have cared about for a long time, it might be easy to...
Well, that would be sad, but I mean, I think most people say that's not the apocalypse. So it sounds like our climate is becoming more like Southern California, except, you know, we still have forests left.
So there's a couple components to that, right? So many people might say it's not the apocalypse. A lot of communities here are fishing communities,
mm-hmm.
tribal communities who depend on the salmon for not only subsistence, not only culture, but identity. So and this is, we're talking about salmon. This is just one example, right? There's many creatures, many wildlife, many fish that are sensitive to this. And so we're talking about climate change driving a transformation of the natural resources and cultural resources that we are accustomed to, but more than that, that we identify with and we've built our economies around, right? So all of these things I'm mentioning, changes in water availability, changes in natural resources like salmon, like forests, changes in risks of flooding and droughts, all will stress our systems in ways we know are difficult to deal with.
Will the Al Gore map come true? When you look at the Al Gore map of Manhattan, of course, you see parts of it underwater. Will parts of Seattle eventually be underwater? Is sea level rising that quickly?
Sea level is projected to rise quite a bit faster than it has already, right? So we've seen about 9 inches of sea level rise.
Right.
And
since when is
Central
that?
Central Puget Sound, since about 1900.
Mm-hmm.
And what, so much faster sea level rise projected for Seattle, Puget Sound, the whole Washington coast over the next century.
So it means high tides will be that much higher.
High tides will be higher. Storms during high tides and king tides will be much higher. So we're projecting as a sort of middle of the road, more likely than not scenario is sort of 2 to 3 feet of sea level rise.
By when?
By 2100.
By 2100.
Hmm. That is if you want to go with a middle of the road. You know, we think this is more likely than not to occur. If you're really worried about building an expensive property or securing a very important road or part of the transportation system on the shoreline, you might want to plan for a scenario that is less likely in our minds to occur, but is still plausible. So at the higher end, sort of a 0.1% chance, it could be 8 or 9 feet.
8 or 9 feet?
8 or 9 feet.
Okay, well, that'd be trouble for that new tunnel we're building, wouldn't it?
It could be.
Unless they put up some big seawalls to protect against windy days and waterproof entry doors.
Well, so now you're getting to the question of, is anybody paying attention to this, right?
Yeah.
And what our group does, the Climate Impacts Group at University of Washington, is do the science to understand what the local impacts are likely to be. So the science I just told you about, what do we expect in sea level rise, is a recent report released from our group in collaboration with Sea Grant. And we work with local decision makers, planners, policymakers, to help identify what those risks are and then help support the use of that information in planning.
Yeah.
So you're building a coastal park. You're building a water treatment facility. You're refurbishing your wastewater treatment plant that's on the shore of Puget Sound. Those things are supposed to last a long time. And if you're going to be a responsible steward of my public money that's mm-hmm. being used to build those things and, you know, get your job done right, you ought to be thinking about what the future is going to look like, where that plant or road or park is. And the good news is people are.
Yeah. So are there current projects which you've consulted on and you've told them, hey, raise this 8 feet higher than you were thinking?
There are current projects that have used sea level rise projections in them or are considering how to use them now.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
I mean, those tracks along between here and Everett, those would be toast, wouldn't they?
They are low, and they are also susceptible to you know, landslides when
mudslides,
it rains.
Right.
And so
now they'd be subject to high tide if your worst-case prediction comes true.
That's right. And so what we do is we bring this information to the attention of people who are making decisions now, right? So there's people all across our region who are making decisions now, investing public dollars or protecting natural areas or deciding where it's safe to live or build.
Mm-hmm.
And it's really important that they have the science they need to make those decisions wisely. Because the decisions that are being made every day are either reducing or enhancing our future risk to climate change.
Yeah. I know that King County is already counseling people who have beachfront property to start thinking about what their property would look like if sea level went up 3 to 4 feet. 8 feet, of course, would be disastrous, I know, for thousands of people. So if you had the president's ear, based on the science, what would be the right thing to do starting now?
So if I had the president's ear and I could wave my magic wand and say, here are the right things to do now because of climate change, there are two major things that I would do. One is I would work as hard as possible to reduce the problem in the first place, right? So what that means is reduce greenhouse gas emissions dramatically and rapidly. So to limit warming to a degree and a half or 2 degrees centigrade, which are the international targets, requires dramatic reductions in emissions over the next 10 to 12 years.
But not just by us, right? I mean, the whole world's got to cooperate on this, exactly. I assume.
Exactly.
Yeah.
We all are in this together, in causing the problem and in dealing with its consequences.
So the consequences of that would be, the first question is, was it due to my gas prices?
Well, then you need to have an economist on your show.
But there would be a cost, right?
The problem is that this pollution is causing problems, but we are all bearing the costs of it right now in terms of the impacts. And so how do we reduce it in the first place?
I think the trouble is, the reason it hasn't gotten traction, the reason things like the carbon fee voted down, is that when you ask about the cost, you never get a straight answer. People say, well, we can't tell you that now. And that's where the distrust comes in, because the straight answer that everybody assumes on the straight answer is 50 cents a gallon, a dollar a gallon, $2 a gallon, European style prices. Let me ask you this. Is there any way that you can tell people the unvarnished truth about what they have to do and have it still be politically acceptable, such that people would vote for such a thing?
So now you're asking a scientist to be a politician.
Well, and unless you are, I don't think any of this is going to happen, right? Because you guys have been throwing the data at us for years. What you've predicted, this was this much I'll say, what you predicted has started coming true, right? Even
That's
sooner than we
right.
thought. And are people moved by that still?
Well, I have seen more concern. Well, okay, so people, in my opinion, are not as moved by this as the urgency of the situation warrants. It's very alarming to look at the projections. I've been looking at these projections for over 20 years, and it was alarming to look at them when they seemed even to me like they were going to happen quite a while in the future. And to see it happening around you and examples of the kinds of problems we're likely to expect unfold where you live, in the places you care about, where people you know live, is really, really hard to see. And so I completely agree that we're not addressing this with the urgency it warrants. I think one of the hard parts about understanding exactly what to do is that we have to get out of the habit of thinking that this is something far off in the future that may or may not happen. This is here and now. This is being caused by our activities. Scientists around the world agree on this. We know that we're making a choice, and every day we are making a choice, whether we realize it or not, to make the problem worse or to start making it better. And we have time, and we have actions open to us if we do it.
But that requires making a decision that would cost us money and would involve imposing new habits on people.
I think, when I think about When I think about addressing climate change and putting a price on the pollution that is causing this problem in the first place and is being allowed to happen for free with no cost, sure, it's going to be more expensive to do those activities that are polluting in the future. The whole point is not to do those anymore, right? Right now, I don't have many options for ways to heat my home or ways to get around in an affordable way. So the ways I do it now that pollute will be more expensive in the future, which means that our wonderful economy, where we're already developing alternative fuel sources and alternative methods of transportation, will kick into high gear and we will have options. We will not be trapped in a situation where all we can do is pay the higher price for the polluting activity. We can walk away from that polluting activity and engage in a clean energy future.
I have every confidence that human ingenuity can come up with an energy source that is compatible with stopping climate change. But what you're talking, and we'll eventually get there, but what will get us there is when the water's lapping at our ankles. See, that's when I think it's going to finally happen. That's when people say, oh, now I get it. They were right. I guess we better do something now. What you're saying is by that time, it's already in a runaway condition, right? It's too late to really snap that back.
You know, it's never too late, right? Think about this. It's hard to come up with the best analogy, but how about this one? So let's say I'm a smoker. I've smoked for a long time, and I'm beginning to experience health impacts from it. Is it too late to stop smoking?
No. Well,
okay, let's say
it's too late to get the same benefit as if you had never started smoking.
Right, but I did.
Yeah.
Right? Okay, so but I don't really want to stop smoking, so I smoke for another 3 years, and I'm having some worse health outcomes.
Yeah.
But I'm still not completely sick. Mm-hmm. So is it too late to stop smoking? No.
Okay, I get
it. It's never too late.
So it's never too late.
However,
The longer you wait,
so the earlier you do it, the better, right? So the best time to stop smoking was before you started.
Yeah.
And the second best time is now. Mm-hmm. And the third best time is as soon as possible.
Well, I got an analogy for you. Remember the decision to ban incandescent light bulbs, right? Take away light bulbs that burned a filament, wasted all that heat, and instead forced us to adopt LEDs. People raised holy hell about that. Now, nobody cares. Because now when you buy a light bulb, you never have to replace it again.
Right. It turns out we wanted light.
Right.
And we don't necessarily care which technology provides us that light.
Exactly.
We would like to get around.
Mm-hmm.
And I think we'd all kind of prefer a clean energy way of getting around.
Absolutely.
We'd all like to heat our homes. And I think we'd all like to live in the world in a way that we're keeping the important parts that we care about.
Okay, right? So how about this then? If it's politically unpalatable to actually price pollution the way they tried to do with the carbon fee, maybe it's time then for the United States of America to start a government-sponsored NASA research project for the cheapest, cleanest way to drive around and just put the government in competition with the internal combustion engine. You start a giant government corporation, Sunergy Incorporated, and they come up. Might take them 5 or 10 years, but they will come up with something that will allow you to drive anywhere you want in a car that runs on water or sunlight or soybeans. And then Ford, GM, and Chrysler either compete or go out of business. Problem solved.
I think what you've just showed us is that all we need is to put our minds to it and the energy to it. We're creative. We've got a lot of good ideas, and there's a lot of stuff beginning. While you do that, you have to keep your eye on the impacts that we're setting in motion, right? Mm-hmm. So while you're doing that and you build your fancy new plant to build your fancy new vehicles, you should think about whether you're not putting it right next to the coastline where the sea level is going to rise.
Mm-hmm.
while you're building your fancy new plant, you might think about making sure that, you know, the transportation system designed to get your workers to and from your plant isn't going to flood with the floods that we've already know we're increasing.
Yeah.
Right. So we've got to think about both sides of the coin of dealing with climate change, which is reducing the problem in the first place and dealing with the impacts that will, you know, either hit us in the Achilles heel or we'll be prepared to deal with them.
So how long are you going to stay in the climate change business? At what point does it get too depressing? As you sit there looking at your crystal ball, knowing what's going to happen, and also knowing that so far no one's done anywhere near what it would take to stop it.
You know, working in climate change has been difficult because we spend all of our time thinking about things that a lot of people don't want to think about at all. And yet, if I'm not trying to make a difference, then I feel like I'm wasting my time. So I am really motivated by, you know, being a native Northwesterner, loving the place that we have here, all the things that you can do inside and outside, looking at the beautiful environment we surround ourselves by, and wanting that to persist. And every day, our goal is to develop and deliver science that people need to make better decisions about the future of this region. It's never too late to do that. It's never time to stop doing that.
Do you ever feel like a time traveler? You ever feel like that person who comes from the future, having seen what's going to happen, and you realize, if I can just go back to 2018 and get them to charge a fee for carbon, I can prevent what I know will happen otherwise?
You know, I feel like a time traveler because I use the tools of science to think about what the implications of today's choices are. And I look at what we expect to happen in the future, and then we see it happening now. So some people might remember the year of 2015 when we had very little snow in the mountains. We had warm temperatures, and we had a snow drought. And we had impacts all over the region in terms of wildfires, hot rivers, health effects. And that was the year we were all time travelers.
Mm-hmm.
Because that's what we expect to see more and more of.
We got a glimpse of the future. What right. It would be like, not just for 1 year, but all the time.
Right.
Yeah. Dr. Amy Snover is director of the UW Climate Impacts Group. And thank you very much for coming in. We appreciate it.
Thank you so much.